This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined alongside by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. Joining us on the show today in about 30 minutes' time, he's the Pittsburgh Penguins correspondent for thehockeywriters.com. Also works for Forbes Sports Money. Mike Colligan is going to join us. No reports on whether any Canadian media reporting that he's been arrested overnight, falsely arrested overnight, as they did earlier this week in one of the more bizarre stories you're ever going to see. We'll talk to Mike about that story. We'll talk to him about the Penguins offseason in general. At the top of the next hour, Josh Cooper is going to join us. He covers the Nashville Predators. Been a tumultuous week in the life of Mr. Cooper. We'll talk to him about the week that has been, and we'll explain everything around that. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Without further ado, I say good morning to my colleagues, Richard and Ezra. Gentlemen, good morning.
Morning, Drew. Morning, Richie. You know, I got to get something off my chest. Before we start, Drew, before we get into the hockey, before we start talking Winnipeg Jets, NHL, and everything else, you know, we did the show last weekend. And last weekend on Sunday was the Labor Day Classic.
It was.
And I know your wife Laura's out of town in Europe.
This is going to be about my lasagna, isn't it?
It is going to be about the lasagna. I got to say, you know, last weekend, you know, we're hanging out. We went out for dinner Saturday night, and we're talking about where we're going to watch the Labor Day Classic. And Drew decides, why not come over to our house? Well, your house.
Mm-hmm. You know, our house, mine and Laura's. Laura wasn't
your
there.
Your and Laura's house. Yes. And, you know, I got to give you credit. You know, Richie's mom is, in my opinion, the best host of all time. She's been having us over since we were in high school. But I got to give you credit. Last Sunday, I get to Drew's house. He's got nachos. He has a lasagna in the oven. He's got beer. He's got, I think you had tonic water even? Who has tonic water?
Well, we had it in the house. I didn't really expect anybody was going to take me up on my offer for a tonic water, but our friend Neil did.
I know we want to get going here. We have lots to talk about. I just got to give you credit. You did a great job hosting. When I host people, you're lucky to find water in the fridge and some bread that's been stale for 2 weeks. So I got to give you credit. You hosted us for the Labor Day Classic.
You'd actually be luckier to find water and bread than you would be beer.
That's true.
Yeah. There's definitely the beer in Ezzy's fridge. It's not always water and bread. Anyways, I appreciate the accolades, Ezzy, and of course the Banjo Bowl tomorrow. Coverage here on TSN 1290. Blue Bomber Game Day gets underway at 1 o'clock with Westwood, Walby, and Bombing, so you can be sure to tune in for that.
I said they'd lose last week. You guys said they'd win.
So what do you say for tomorrow then?
They'll win tomorrow. Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Anyways, let's get started with the Winnipeg Jets. Not a lot of big news coming out of Winnipeg Jets camp this week, but a couple of little things. Let's start with the news that the Jets are going to keep the AHL operations in St. John's through the 2015-2016 season. Just a function of Thunder Bay not being ready yet, in your mind?
Do they have an arena there?
No.
So it's no surprise.
Yeah.
These people are creating, it's new. This is news. I mean, it's where else are they going to play?
They could have potentially looked for another market that was closer to Winnipeg.
So uproot everything for a year, maybe, if not two. You have a successful franchise there. I know it's a lot of travel, but you like the way the structure, you have everything in place. Why would you change it? Seems fine to me.
Yeah, I agree, Richie. And this is the best news. Well, who really wins here is the city of St. John's. And they have supported the Ice Caps since they arrived. And When you are in a situation, and we know this better than anybody, the last few years the Jets 1.0 were here, it's nice that the contract, the affiliation agreement, I should say, between True North, Winnipeg Jets, St. John's Ice Caps has been renewed, because now you know that the team will be there for at least 2 years. And there might be the chance that True North decides to move the team at some point, but now it's nice to know for the Ice Caps fans, because last year, I mean, it was fantastic going to the Calder Cup final, and the team has been very well supported. We've had Robin Short on the program before, Keith McCambridge, and obviously other shows on this program, on the station, and it's just nice that the fans of the Ice Caps know that the team's going to be there for the foreseeable future. And again, you know, we've talked about Thunder Bay before, and at this point, you know, Richie mentions no arena. We don't know what's going to happen. And I mean, I know the rumors are out there that, you know, that there's a possibility that the AHL team actually plays out of the MTS Center maybe before a team in Thunder Bay happens. It's nice to know, I think, for fans especially, because I think we'd all agree the fans in St. John's have really supported that team well, and the team is starting to do well now, as I mentioned. So I think it's great news.
No argument exactly with what you said there. It just seems logical that they'd go ahead and do it. Something about the way, I mean, I hope St. John's finds another NHL team to be the AHL affiliate of somewhere closer on the mm-hmm. Eastern Seaboard there. Because you're right, given the way that the fans supported the Ice Caps since they moved there and the Jets came back and everything else, I always thought it was a little unfortunate. I understand it from the True North perspective.
What about Ottawa?
Ottawa.
Eventually, because, you know, Montreal is Hamilton, you keep it in Canada. Toronto has Toronto. Mm-hmm. Keeping Ottawa in their farm team in Canada might be a good idea.
Sure, Ottawa, because right now they're playing in Binghamton, right. I believe. And yeah. I mean, I'm sure that Binghamton's a little bit closer, but is it a deal breaker closer if the money is, you know, if the money's right?
Just, I think the connections between the Canadian teams is always a positive.
Yeah, certainly. I'm sure there's a whole army of Winnipeg Jets fans in St. John's, Newfoundland right now, where, you know, you wouldn't normally get that if you don't have the symmetry.
Well, same thing here, following the Canucks. If you were, you know, a Moose fan, you would be following the Canucks and Kessler, Nedler, and all those guys.
And I think, Schneider. Richie, there's always the chance that if the Winnipeg Jets and True North decide to move the team, whether it's Thunder Bay or to another Canadian city, there's always the chance that St. John's could always get another team. It's not like that's not an option. I think it would actually be very likely that they would get a different team. And of course, you have, you know, the talk of California teams in the AHL and different franchises in the AHL moving to California. So teams like the Anaheim Ducks, the Los Angeles Kings, as Richie mentioned, could have teams in their own time zone, in their own state in this case, because as you know, Anaheim and LA have teams. Well, Manchester is not very close to California.
No, well, they got to be able to actually sell tickets, though.
Yeah, and there's talk that the AHL is going to try and get a whole Western division that'll play almost out of California.
Got to be able to sell tickets,
right?
Yeah, you got. Of course, you got to be able to sell tickets.
Got to sell tickets to the NHL team, never mind the AHL team.
absolutely the case. Moving away from the Ice Caps and to some of the Jets' younger players, it was announced earlier this week, 2014 first round draft pick Nikolai Ehlers has signed with the Winnipeg Jets, an entry level deal. He will be on the ice with the Young Stars team mm-hmm. when they play in Penticton next week. All the games can be heard here on TSN 1290. Ehlers was on Hustler and Lawless earlier this week. This is what he had to say about signing with the Winnipeg Jets.
I can't really describe the feeling right now. I mean, this has been my dream. I've been waiting for this for a long time now. So it's great now to have this deal done. I'm so proud. And thankful for all the people who have supported me. So it's great. I mean, I've been walking around with a smile all day. So yeah.
Ehlers, obviously exciting day for him. No surprise there whatsoever. I want to talk about the article in today's Winnipeg Free Press. Gary wrote an interesting article, and if you haven't read it yet, we do encourage you to do it. I'll tweet it out from our Twitter feed at Legal Curve as well. Basically, if I can sum up the article, Gary's saying that if the Winnipeg Jets, if their young players aren't completely ready for the NHL, but they don't look completely out of place, the Jets would be better off going with the young guys this year on the bottom lines than they would going with the same sort of retreads that we've seen in past years, guys like Eric Tangrady, who we know can't get the job done. So it's sort of a different approach than what we've been saying for the last number of years, that don't rush them. But Gary's saying, look, if they're not 100% ready, but they're 65% ready, 70% ready, I'm just arbitrarily making up the number here, mm-hmm. the Jets would be better off playing those guys and giving them a live taste of the NHL action. Your thoughts on that idea, which is a sort of a change in direction from what we've seen the last number of years?
I think that comes down a lot to, you know, concept-wise, what the organization thinks about the first versus the second contract. And what I mean by that is if you play a guy like Nikolai Ehlers on, you know, when he's 18 years old, 19 years old, you burn a year of his entry-level deal. Okay, now if he plays, I believe it's 40 games, then he gets a year towards free agency. If he plays less than that and over 10 games, he just burns a year off his entry-level deal and is eligible for restricted free agency sooner. But the point is, you're accelerating that process, and you're assuming that, well, basically this is what you're doing. You're likely not going to get great value for him in the first year. Maybe in the second or third year you'll get it, but if the Jets aren't going to be a cap team, Drunez, the problem is bringing Ehlers in his 18-year-old year. He's not going to be as good as he would be in the 19-year-old year or the 20-year-old year. And if he comes in as a rookie in his 20-year-old year and gets you 55, 60 points and you're paying, you know, $800,000, whatever he's slotted to make, that's really good value for a team that's not going to spend. Whereas if he comes in next year and gets 25 points, may or may not lose his confidence, and then he comes in the next year a little bit better, and then the third year he really performs, then you're paying him already. Now, the LA Kings and the Detroit Red Wings are less concerned about the first contract and kind of push it to the second contract. What I mean by that is they wait, and finally have the guy perform. You know, they finally bring the guy in when he's 20, 21, 22. They give him a limited role in the first or second year, and he's already up on a second contract. Then they kind of bridge him over, see if he's the real deal. Then they start paying him. And it's a different concept. Some other people will bring a guy in young and then sign him to a second deal, like they're going to do with Trouba, for example, to a long-term deal. There's no bridge contract. So there's different concepts in how you want to do it. I think personally, if the Jets aren't going to be any good this year, as far as I can tell. And if they're not going to be any good, I wouldn't want to burn a year of an entry-level deal on a guy like Ehlers, for example. Now, Lowry's different in the sense that he's already a pro. He's playing in the AHL, so he's a pro contract, so you can see what you're going to do with him. But the young guys, and Morrissey as well, I wouldn't burn a year on Morrissey, and I wouldn't burn a year on Ehlers, because I think the value you will get down the road, never mind the development, but the value you will get down the road will be better than if you bring him this year, burn a year of his entry-level deal, still don't make the playoffs. If you look at it, like, you know, if Morrissey can be the captain of the World Junior team this year and win a championship there and dominate the league, yeah, maybe he's playing against guys and he's proven himself in that respect. Okay, at the end of the year, you bring him up, and then the next year, he starts off on your squad.
Sort of the Mark Scheifele development method, in that he exhausted his junior career, didn't have to play any games in the AHL, and made the step, could step right into the NHL lineup when he did.
Yeah, that idea. I mean, I certainly understand Gary's point here, but the Jets aren't a big spending team, right? And they're not going to be, as far as we can tell. So if that's the case, I'd want to protect the assets as much as I could before I start paying them. And, you know, Nick Petan, a similar thing. You don't know. Like, Nick Petan is the kind of guy I would want to roll out in the AHL anyways. Like, you want to make sure you develop these guys too and don't push them forward. And Gary's saying, you know, you don't want to push them forward too much. But at the same time, jumping a guy into the NHL before the AHL on a team that's talking about development, well, what is the identity and what is the vision? And are you consistent with that in times of trouble? This is a time of trouble right now. There's been 3 years. They've done nothing. They've had opportunities in the first 2 years playing in a terrible division, didn't take advantage of it. We're in a great team, but we weren't playing against great teams. Last year, they faded, if they were ever really in it. This year, the expectations are pretty low. So that, you know, that patience is, I personally want to see the team, if I'm a fan, stick to the vision for the young guys. Kevin Cheveldayoff's mistakes, in my opinion, have been, and I know he's made some efforts to sign guys, etc., but it's difficult to sign guys. We'll talk to Josh Cooper about how it's difficult to sign guys in Nashville. But his mistake, in my opinion, Kevin Cheveldayoff, is not being able to trade and be creative enough to acquire players to make this, to get the point of Gary's article, less of an issue. And that's to me the biggest flaw.
And I think Richie makes a lot of good points. And of course, Nikolai Ehlers just signed this week, and I think there's an appetite in Winnipeg amongst fans to see these guys play right away. And that includes Josh Morrissey. Richie mentions that includes Nick Petan, Adam Lowry, who I think, because he was in the AHL this past year, there's a better chance that you'll see Adam Lowry play. But to me, Richie, you have the point to me that really is the one that I think is the most important, is that, and you have to look at these cases individually. And I know that where the team is at is important. So, for example, a team like the Chicago Blackhawks, a guy like Andrew Shaw, a guy like Brandon Saad can come in later draft picks, and they can come in, but they've got Patrick Kane, they've got Jonathan Taves, they've got Marian Hossa, they're solidified. I agree with what Gary's saying, and I know that these players don't have to necessarily play in the top six. I think we'd all agree that even Nikolai Ehlers, who had 100-plus points in the QMJHL last year, he wouldn't play in the top six. I mean, whose spot is he taking? I think the point here that Richie was making is that you're burning the entry-level deal when the player is probably better served making his improvements in the junior leagues. So if you're, and again, if you're talking about Josh Morrissey, first of all, there's a good chance he's the captain of the junior team, and he's getting better. And I think Josh Morrissey is a huge part of the defense looking forward. And Nikolai Ehlers, 18 years old. Again, you know, I look at a guy like Elias Lindholm.
It's not
who was drafted sixth overall by the Carolina Hurricanes last year, and he scored 20 points. And we talked to John Forslund about this many times. He struggles, and then if you think that, and again, Gary, I think, is making good points here, but if you have a player and you think he's, okay, let's say he's almost ready to go, and they would rather give Nikolai Ehlers that wing spot as opposed to, I don't know, TJ Gagliardi.
Well, it's true. Ehlers probably talent-wise over any other third-line winger is going to win that one out. And if you look at, from the other perspective, if you look at Morrissey over, say, Mark Stewart, yeah, probably win that out talent-wise. He would win it out talent-wise. But the thing is if because of the inability of Kevin Cheveldayoff to add a third-line winger and to add a top-four defenseman, he shouldn't then rush the players out of his team because he couldn't fill those spots.
And even though Nikolai Ehlers
might
be more
talented.
You mean don't compound
the mistake.
Yes.
And the thing is, it's not talent. I mean, this is the NHL. This is the best hockey league in the world. Yeah. If you're talented, sure, that's fine. But are you able to sustain your level of play over an 80-game schedule? Nikolai Ehlers and Josh Morrissey have never played pro hockey.
Both small.
Well, I mean, actually, that's not true. Josh Morrissey played a little bit for the Icecaps.
Yeah, sure. Both small, though.
But what I'm saying they've never played a full season. And again, I'm not advocating that either of these guys aren't ready. Because I think we'd all agree, a guy like Olli Maatta on the Pittsburgh Penguins, we didn't expect him to be as good as he was.
Big boy, though.
Not exactly. Not saying that these guys aren't ready for the NHL. And as we've mentioned, Drew, we played the audio of Nikolai Ehlers. I'm sure he's ready to go into the NHL. I'm sure he'd love to play for the Winnipeg Jets next year. He's an uber-talented player.
We met him at the draft. What's he, 160?
If that. I mean, he was small.
So you got to go back to junior. You got to start eating, right? He's a young guy, of course. I mean, get him on a plan. Get him working out. Get him bulking up. See how he plays at a bulked up level. You know, people think, oh, put some weight on. That sometimes changes the way a player plays. Remember Peter Mueller? Now, it's a different case with Ehlers here. But Peter Mueller, uber talented player, was a smaller guy, put on a ton of muscle, totally changed the way he played. He couldn't adjust to that and then couldn't adjust to going back, and he's hardly in the league anymore. Was he just an invite to the PTO to St. Louis or something? I mean, the idea is you have to let these guys develop on their own. There's no pressure. Nobody's going to know what's going on in the queue. Don't put undue pressure on these guys because you couldn't fill roles on the team. And I'm not saying, again, it's without effort. I know there's some guys that the Jets tried to sign that wouldn't come here. But then you got to make some moves trade-wise. But it's exactly as you said. Don't compound the mistakes. Why rush?
And when it comes to Nikolai Ehlers and Josh Morrissey and Nick Pitan, I agree with Richie. I think, you know, the drafting in the last couple of drafts has been excellent. But again, these are 18- and 19-year-old guys. And you have to keep that in mind here. And I think that, again, you know, we're always talking to fans and everything, and people are always asking us, you know, is this guy going to make the team? Again, these guys will be given an opportunity to make the team, but there's still the opportunity for them to play one more year in junior or to play a year in the AHL. They're not going anywhere. And I think, as Richie mentioned, you don't want to burn a year of an entry-level contract for a player who's really still, let's say, 60% or 70% ready for the NHL.
You have to pay, I know, we can go long here for a second.
Go ahead.
You have to pay Scheifele and Trouba after two seasons at the same time.
Right.
So, I mean, do you want to start paying guys after? Get a little bit of a buffer there, too, to see, you know, what your money's like.
Stagger when you have to pay everybody their next
contract.
And,
I mean, it's not going to be all the same time if you're bringing guys up now. But the development of this, and the other aspect of it is this. You're bringing guys into play, you're likely going to bring them into playing on a losing team. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, is this the environment that you want to play them in? And that's a question to ask. I mean, I personally think what the Jets should be doing is trading away their veteran guys and going with youth. That's what I think. Now, I'm saying youth in terms of a development process, not bringing these guys up we were talking about. That would obviously be contradicting myself. But the idea is, you know, Ladd and Byfuglien, 2 years left both on their deals. I think those are the kind of guys you're looking to probably move. In my opinion, that's what I would be looking at. It's my personal opinion. And then you can whoever you're going to fill those spots with. But the idea is I just think you look at, like, for example, in baseball, a team like the Tampa Bay Rays, who's always up against the cap. The Jets have more money to spend, you know, if you're comparing the league's NHL to Major League Baseball. But the idea is they're not going to bring a guy up and start paying him until they have to, unless he's an absolutely exceptional talent. These guys are good talents. They're not Nathan McKinnon's. We're not talking about Nathan McKinnon here. We're not talking about Connor McDavid. We're talking about very good players, potentially. But why you would accelerate that payment process and even the development process and the pressure and all that, when you can get him cheap the next year at the same at a year older at the same price, that's the way I'd be looking.
We'll find out over the course of the next month as Winnipeg Jets training camp and rookie camp gets underway. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. When we come back, we discuss the question, Mario Lemieux, hypocrite? We'll find out.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
25 minutes past the hour here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. In the winter of 2011, Penguins owner Mario Lemieux sent a strong and public message to the NHL in regard to a sideshow brawl between the Pittsburgh Penguins players and those of the New York Islanders. Calling the incident a travesty, the retired Hall of Famer went on to talk about the type of league and game he wants to be associated with. Quote, "We as a league must do a better job of protecting the integrity of the game and the safety of our players," Lemieux said. "We must make it clear that those kinds of actions will not be tolerated." That comes from an article, a blog post written by Adam Proto of the Hockey News, a frequent guest on this show and on this station. He goes on in the article to call Mario Lemieux a hypocrite for the Penguins having signed Daniel Carcillo to a professional tryout offer and Steve Downey to a one-year contract this offseason. Does Adam Proto have a point that Mario Lemieux is a hypocrite for having said those comments in the winter of 2011 and then signing those players this offseason?
Yeah, I mean, he is, Drew. We should point out the fact that Ray Shearer was a general manager before when those comments were made. Jim Rutherford is a general manager now. So Mario Lemieux isn't, you know, hands-on as far as we can tell in the day-to-day operations of the team, but you'd assume a decision like that, you know, I would assume the expected reaction would have been, you know, at least vetted by Mario Lemieux. It is hypocritical, and this is the problem in the National Hockey League. When people complain about the fighting or complain about the dirty play, the teams eventually come to a decision, not all of them, but some of them do, that the only way to fight that type of behavior is with that type of behavior, is with those types of players. How do you fight Steve Downey's and Dan Carcillo's? Well, you bring a one or two of them onto your team, and you let them go at the other troublemakers on the other team. So I think part of it is, you know, if you want to get, you don't want to get bullied, so you want to punch the bully back in the face. And you don't want that, you know, if you want to talk in a literal sense, you don't want that guy punching the guy in the face to be Sidney Crosby.
Sure.
You know, you don't want him to be throwing his body around like that. So, yeah, he's a hypocrite. Dan Carcillo, to me, like Steve Downey, both of them are crazy players. And they play with complete lack of respect as far as I'm concerned. I will, as he said off air, and I agree with him, that Steve Downey can play a bit. I mean, he can certainly play a top 12 role in the National Hockey League. You know, your third line right wing or maybe your fourth line right wing on a really good team. Dan Carcillo, I mean, I know he had some effective spurts with the Rangers, but Dan Carcillo at times and oftentimes, I would say, plays with complete reckless abandon. I mean, he doesn't even care if the puck's on the ice half the time. You watch him play, and there are times when he doesn't even know where the puck is. And that I have no time for. And so the Downey one I can see is a little more defensible. But back to your original question, yes, I do believe that this is hypocritical from Mario Lemieux, but I understand why he's being and his organization is being hypocritical.
And I think we should stress as well, Richie, that Daniel Carcillo has only been signed to a tryout. So
I mean,
I'm just saying, I think that Even so, I think we'd agree that Steve Downey is going to play a more prominent role on this team. I know what you're saying, though. I mean, it's still they still have signed him. I think it says a lot that Mario Lemieux, well, Jim Rutherford now, the Pittsburgh Penguins, have signed Daniel Carcillo from what team? The team that knocked them out of the playoffs last year. To me, this is the point here, guys. The Pittsburgh Penguins, and I think we'd all agree, they are sick of getting knocked out in the first or second round. And to me, signing a guy like Steve Downey, signing a guy like Daniel Carcillo, this is a direct response to Brandon Dubinsky dominating Sidney Crosby. It's a direct response to Sean Couturier in previous years dominating Sidney Crosby as far as shutting them down. And let's be honest, this team needs to get tougher.
Great points.
And I know that, you know, and this isn't just, and I'm not talking about fighting here. I'm talking about, and you know, you go back a couple of years, and I know Rafi Torres is injured for the San Jose Sharks now, and he might only play half a season. But when it comes down to the playoffs, guys, who is the most effective player, one of the most effective players for the LA Kings the first time they won their first cup? Dustin Brown. What was Dustin Brown doing? He was running around the ice hitting every single body that he saw. I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins, they're a soft team. And, you know, I know they had Tanner Glass last year, and Tanner Glass is now in the New York Rangers. But, you know, a guy like Steve Downey, he'll go around and hit. And I agree. I like Steve Downey a little bit more than Richie does. He's struggled, and he's had injuries, and he hasn't put up the offensive numbers that he did back, you know, 4 or 5 years ago with the Tampa Bay Lightning. But he's a guy, it makes your team tougher when it matters. And I think, you know, as far as Mario Lemieux goes, a guy that, you know, it's sometimes because he was bigger, you know, a guy like Gretzky had Dave Semenko always around him and other guys, Marty McSorley around him. A guy like Mario Lemieux was a little bit bigger. He could handle himself, but he also had guys around him protecting him. I mean, let's be honest here. Sidney Crosby shouldn't be, you know, having to fend for himself the way he has. You got to have a guy. I realize, and I know people are probably going to disagree with this. I still believe that even though we're 30 years later, You need a guy like Dave Semenko protecting a Gretzky. You need a guy protecting Sidney Crosby. I truly believe that. If you have a guy, and I know that, you know, you still have to stick up for yourself and everything like that. But let's be honest, the last couple of years in the playoffs, and I know Sidney Crosby was injured, obviously had the wrist injury. He's getting beat up out there. And I think when you have these guys on the ice, I think it makes other players think twice.
We'll talk more about the Penguins after the break. Mike Colligan from thehockeywriters.com, the Penguins correspondent, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
25 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the show our good friend, Mike Colligan. Mike covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. He also works for Forbes Sports Money. Mike, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Drew. Good to hear from you guys.
Likewise, Mike. Got to start with the one of the most bizarre stories you're ever going to experience. That's the false story of Sidney Crosby getting arrested in Ottawa earlier this week. You know, take us through. We know what the reaction was in Canada. Take us through the reaction in Pennsylvania to what has proven to be one of the biggest screw ups by a newspaper in a long, long time.
Yeah, and that's what's funny. I guess we're in an age where these things happen, but it's mind-boggling to think that a respected mainstream outlet can even come close to running a story like that. And it came out in the middle of the night, so you know, maybe they could have gotten away with it in another age, but in these days, especially a player like Sidney Crosby, it was just pandemonium, at least in the short term there, while people tried to figure out what happened. And I guess there's an interest in these outlets to get the stories out there as quick as possible. And there's almost an aura around Sidney Crosby where I think people are waiting for that story to come. And they've been waiting for years for people that maybe aren't fans of Crosby or his personality. They kind of want to see that happen. They want to see him get arrested or something bad happen to him. It's funny how we are as a hockey culture and as sports fans, but you know, it's, I think something that I don't know the whole story. I probably can't even comment on it and give you a full insight into what happened there. But I think with everything that's happened with this Penguins organization this summer, lots of changes in the management group, lots of changes on the roster. I don't think this is really out of character. It's been an odd season for the Penguins. Certainly this fits in line with that.
Well, Mike, the reason probably why you can't really talk about it is because it wasn't a real story. So, but, you know, sticking with Sidney Crosby for a second, you know, we were talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins last segment and Sidney Crosby and how he performed in the playoffs. Is he ready to go for the playoffs? What's his latest health status?
Yeah, that's up in the air at this point. He says he's fine. He says he's been training, but I don't expect much different from Crosby. He tends to be a guy that, at least at this age, doesn't acknowledge even when things are wrong. And I know watching him in the playoffs last year, I was convinced that he was injured. And I thought potentially multiple injuries because he just wasn't himself. He didn't look himself physically, even mentally. There was a lot going on there, and he finally admitted a few weeks into the summer that he had a wrist problem and was potentially going to get surgery. He was able to avoid that surgery, but you never know with those lingering injuries. You know, it's like a shoulder where you hope that an off season can get that healed. But for a guy like Crosby, he's not going to sit there and be idle for too long, and you just hope that he gave that wrist some time to heal because you know that's going to be a target next season for a lot of opponents.
Mike, training camp's coming up in less than 2 weeks. We wanted to talk to you now about some on-ice play here. James Neal was traded, as you know, to the Nashville Predators in exchange for Nick Spaulding, Patrick Hornquist. I guess a two-part question here for you. We know that, Mike, we know that this year it might be a little bit different as far as pairings go. Pascal Dupuis' health is up in the air. I guess two-part question. Is this trade going to make the team better, give them a better shot at being successful in the playoffs? And where do you think Patrick Hornquist and Nick Spaulding fit in as far as line combinations go? Because as I was going to mention, Mike Johnson said that he might go with pairs as opposed to keeping three players together on the forward lines.
Yeah, that's exactly right, and that's every indication from Johnson at this point. You know, the James Neal Patrick Hornquist swap was interesting, and I always ask questions when a 40-goal scorer like James Neal is traded multiple times in his early career. I think it makes you think twice maybe about who James Neal is or potentially what kind of guy he is around, and there have been stories good and bad about him. I can't probably comment on that and feel good about any specifics, but I think for the Pittsburgh Penguins, they've always been able to score goals. They necessarily haven't had the grit and the character that a guy like Patrick Hornquist brings. You know, he works hard 100% of the time out there, goes to the net. A lot of the things the Penguins were missing last year, they weren't a tough team. And we saw when they got up against Columbus in the first round, Columbus almost was able to pull the upset. The New York Rangers were a much tougher team, and the Penguins had no answer when a guy like Brandon Dubinsky was giving Sidney Crosby problems and flashing and cross-checking him in the head. The Penguins really had no answer. And so I think for right or wrong reasons, the Penguins decided they needed to get a lot tougher this season, and part of that was a guy like Hornquist, part with some of their lower line additions as well. But I think Hornquist will fit right in line with Evgeny Malkin on a second line. If you're talking tandems, Sidney Crosby and Chris Kunitz are, I think, attached for life, or at least as long as Chris Kunitz is still an elite player. The question becomes who can play with Malkin, and it's not an easy task. James Neal was able to do it. He simplified his game and became just a pure sniper. I think Patrick Hornquist is capable of the same. He's not a guy that's going to be making moves high in the zone or trying to get creative offensively. He plays simple. He goes to the net hard, and that's exactly what Evgeny Malkin needs, the time and the space for him to be creative and use his wizardry and his skills.
You know, Mike, it's interesting to me that Brandon Sutter, he re-signs for 2 years at 3.3 per year, and he's going to be a UFA after this contract is up. He was the guy traded, and probably one of the centerpieces, Pouliot as well, in the Jordan Staal trade. And, of course, Jim Rutherford was the Carolina GM then who traded Brandon Sutter. What are your thoughts on this contract? Is this kind of a put-up-or-shut-up kind of contract? And does the fact that Rutherford traded Sutter speak at all to his belief in the player?
That's a great point. I kind of, that slipped my mind a bit, but it's right. You know, I guess you could argue that the opportunity to get a guy like Jordan Staal sometimes causes you to give up assets that you actually are feeling good about, but the question certainly has to be raised about how Rutherford really feels about Sutter. And I know under the prior regime, under Ray Shiro, the Penguins were hot after the trail of Ryan Kesler. They had planned on breaching that topic and trying to get him at the draft this summer. And obviously with Shiro not in charge anymore, that cooled off a bit and Kesler headed elsewhere. But I think it was for the exact reason that you mentioned, is Sutter really a number three center? I think we've seen what happens when teams are able to shut down Crosby and Malkin, and the Penguins don't have a lot to bring to the table beyond that. They need Sutter to be a strong option, whether it's strong defensively in a shutdown role or contributing more offensively. And I think until this point, what I've seen from him is he does well when he's with strong wingers. He's a kind of a complementary center in that sense, and he can certainly move up the lineup and play with talented players, but he's not a guy that can carry a third line on his own. And I'm not sure the Penguins have really beefed up their third lines enough to give him that insulation. So I think this will be a very important season for him. And if he's not able to become a very strong third line center, I think the Penguins will look outside the organization and potentially move on from him after the season.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, online tsn1290.ca. Our guest is Mike Colligan. Mike covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. Mike, we were talking in the previous segment about the Penguins bringing in both Steve Downey on a one-year contract and Daniel Carcillo on a professional tryout offer, bringing him into training camp. Are the presence of both of those guys strictly, you know, so that the other teams playing against the Penguins no longer feel as though they can take liberties with the star players without having any real repercussions?
I think that's a pretty safe assumption. Again, when you talked of what happened in the playoffs and how there was really no reaction at all from the Penguins as far as abuse of their superstars, those are guys that, as we know, are very willing to do just about anything when it comes down to it. It's just a matter of how those guys can really fit into a roster like the Penguins that was made up of kind of model citizens and guys that played the game the right way and were decent on and off the ice. You're throwing them into a locker room now with Daniel Carcillo, and we know his history. He's been on talented teams, but there's a reason that a guy like that is no longer with those teams and now has to take a tryout offer. To me, that says a lot about who he is. And that's throwing fireworks into there. And maybe that's what this Penguins team needs. They perhaps got comfortable under Dan Bylsma and under the stability that they had the last five seasons as they weren't able to get back to the Stanley Cup Finals. But you wonder what happens with a team with so much turnover and so much change if they struggle out of the gate, which I think is certainly possible. How do all of these firecrackers mix in when you've got strong personalities in Sidney Crosby mixed with guys like Daniel Carcillo and Steve Downey? I think there's a lot of wild cards there, and it'll be interesting to see how that plays out if things don't get off to a hot start in Pittsburgh.
Mike, we wanted to next ask you about Christian Ehrhoff. And again, I love these two-part questions here. And I think I think you'd agree that Christian Ehrhoff was signed to a one-year deal, and he had all types of problems in Buffalo after coming over from San Jose. I guess the two-part question is, what type of role do you think that Christian Ehrhoff is going to play on this team? And I guess, do you think that he's going to be able to fill the void? Because as we know, the defense has changed quite a bit in Pittsburgh.
That's right. You know, I think that was one of the best deals of the offseason around the league. It really went under the radar. And you mentioned kind of his reputation was one that playing in Buffalo, he's never going to look good with that roster that they've had the last few seasons. And also just with that contract cloud hanging over him. I mean, we've seen what it does for good players like Daniel Briere or others that are weighed down and are never going to play up to the level that they're signed to. But I think to be able to bring in a guy like that on a reasonable contract for 1 year, I think it works well for both sides. It gives Ehrhoff the opportunity to get out from that under that Buffalo shadow. And I thought he actually played pretty well in games I saw of Buffalo last year. He was one of their bright spots in addition to Ryan Miller. And I think he's a guy that slots in probably a second pair. The first pair will be Chris Letang and Paul Martin. But the thing with both of those guys, and neither really has been able to be a strong presence on the power play. Letang has some decision-making issues that I know he's trying to work through. Martin doesn't really have a hard shot for the power play. He's a great puck distributor, but really hasn't been able to bring a hard shot or offensive abilities to their top unit. So I think Ehrhoff will get an opportunity there. And if you think of of him maybe as a second pairing defenseman that's very strong in that sense, but can also give you some special teams time. That could be a great deal for not only the Penguins, but also for him as he looks to probably cash in on another big contract next summer. So I think it works out for both of them, but the Penguins had some turnover on defense this summer, and there will be moving parts there and certainly opportunity for younger players to move in as well.
Mike, Evgeny Malkin, you know, you hear talk from the KHL about Ovechkin and Malkin and whether they're going to eventually go over to the KHL. Is that something that is concerning the Pittsburgh brass at all, but a possible return by Malkin to the KHL or to Russia and play in the KHL maybe sooner rather than later? Or is that, as far as they're concerned, just baseless speculation?
Yeah, I've never gotten that sense, both from kind of the Malkin side as well as the team side, that there was any concern about that being a factor. But that said, we know some of these players can change their mind. And we look at Ilya Kovalchuk. I don't think there was any sense that he was inching towards a return to Russia, certainly with all the money that he was owed from the Devils, and then just one day walks away from it. So I think the same could be said of Malkin. And that's the thing about Malkin. You know, we know Sidney Crosby. We've seen him plastered over the television and all over the place for the last 10 years now. But I don't think people really know Evgeny Malkin, and I'll admit that I don't have a good sense for his personality because he's rarely in front of the media. He's hidden behind the language barrier for a while. Mm-hmm. I know new head coach Mike Johnston wants him to come in and perhaps take on more of a leadership role and take some of the pressure off Sidney Crosby, but I don't think we really know who Malkin is and how he'll react to a new head coach. And if he continues to fall short of the Stanley Cup, what that'll mean to his psyche. So it's certainly a factor. I just haven't gotten a sense at this point that it's concerned by the team as far as him going back to Russia in the near future.
And Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. The Penguins obviously have a new head coach. It took them a while to get there, but Mike Johnston's coming in as the new head coach of the Penguins. You know, what are the players or what's the expectation of kind of style that Mike Johnston's going to play with this team? Is he going to, you know, turn things on its head, or is he just going to sort of take the guys that he's got and try and shape them to the best of their abilities?
You know, when I look at Mike Johnston, he's a guy that reminds me of Dan Bylsma. And it's funny because you would think the Penguins were trying to get away from Dan Bylsma, and the criticisms were that he was too nice, perhaps, or he wasn't willing to be that tough coach. And I just don't get the sense that Mike Johnston's too different from that. I don't think that's necessarily a problem, you know, because there's a shelf life to all head coaches. And I think the team was at a point where they were starting to tune out Bylsma and his words and phrases that he continued to use. It was just getting old and they needed a change. So maybe a guy like Johnston is a right move where you've still got the same roster in place as far as the top end talent goes. You don't want to reinvent the wheel like a team like Washington did where you lose your identity. So I think in that sense, Johnston, he throws out the terms puck possession that every team seems to be doing yeah. right now, but he seems like he has a system that can back that up, and I think that'll fit well with this roster and certainly the top end players they have.
Mike Colligan covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. He's also the NHL analyst for Forbes Sports Money. Mike, thanks for joining us this morning.
You got it, guys. Thanks a lot.
We'll do it again soon. Thanks, Mike. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Shortly before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Big thank you to Mike Colligan for joining us. Still to come next hour, at the top of the hour, a few minutes from now, Josh Cooper is going to join us, covers the Nashville Predators. This segment of the show is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey.
What a commercial!
The new commercial.
Sorry, keep going.
The new commercial, of course. Jewish high holidays are coming up, so Bernstein's Deli is your destination for that. Make it nice and easy, as they did for Ezzy in that commercial. But, of course, you still have today and tomorrow to head down to Bernstein's. Try the Sweet to Meet You burger. Yeah. We taste-tested it here on the air last Saturday.
It's awesome.
It's for Burger Week. It's absolutely fantastic, the burger. I was there yesterday. I believe you were there every day this week so far.
I was there twice a day.
Twice a day, every
day. So yeah. I've had about 10 burgers.
Okay.
You got to go, and there are some other great burgers out there, but you have to go this weekend because it's a limited time only.
That's right.
And you got to vote for Bernstein's Deli, one of our sponsors, of course, and our good friend Aaron. You got to go there, try this burger, because we had it last week on air. People were telling us that were listening to the show, were telling us they were actually going to, they were driving in their cars listening to the show, and they went to Bernstein's right after listening because it sounded
happy,
that good.
I'm just happy that this is just Aaron's warm up for the Illegal Curve sandwich.
Yes,
for the real deal.
That's, you know, the anticipation building for that is going to be sometime probably in October.
Are we going to have Gary on to try the sandwich?
Nah. Gary.
Gary who?
Because Gary yeah, is one of the biggest Illegal Curve sandwich haters out there.
I know. So exactly. So this sandwich is going to be so good, I think Gary's going to have to, you know, he's going to have to do some penance before we let him have.
We're not going
to
egg Gary's house. We're going to throw Illegal Curve sandwiches at Gary's house.
Just, well, smoked meat coming at the
window. When I meet girls now, like when I'm at the bar and talking to girls, and you know, they say, oh, what's your name? And I say, Ezra. And I say, it's sweet to meet you. And I just hand them a burger.
That's a good line, Ezra. That's very good. Let's talk about a signing or two in the NHL. A couple of odds and ends from around the NHL. Martin Brodeur says he would consider being the backup to Carey Price in Montreal.
Go back earlier this summer. Did I not mention that? We were talking about what teams Marty Brodeur would go to if it wasn't New Jersey. Obviously, we're not going to be able to find that audio. It makes so much sense. I mean, his
does
dad...
Does it, though?
Makes no sense.
Well, it makes sense for him. Well,
distraction. You don't need that.
It makes sense for him. I don't think it's going to happen. I should clarify that.
They currently have a backup goaltender under contract. Two of them.
Dustin Tokarski or Peter Budaj.
They're both under contract. So
it's not happening. But, I mean, I'm just saying, I think we're at the point right now, with a couple of weeks to go, less than a couple of weeks to go before training camp, Marty Brodeur doesn't have a contract, and he's probably getting a little bit desperate as far as other... guys, the Devils signed Scott Clemenson. I mean, he's going to back up Corey Schneider this year. So, if Marty Brodeur doesn't sign within the next couple of weeks, I mean, is he retiring?
Does it really matter?
He's got three cups. He's got an Olympic gold. I mean, I said it, Richie, last year. I think, and anybody that's listened to the show knows I'm the biggest Marty Brodeur fan out there. Mm-hmm. The guy's the greatest goalie of all time, in my opinion. So he has nothing to prove. He's done everything. He's got the records. He's got the shutout records. He's got the wins records. Yeah. He's got the cups, everything. Yeah. And Montreal just doesn't make sense. Hey, Dustin Tokarski, we saw him in the playoffs last year. I mean, I think Montreal, I know Timmy's a huge Habs fan. I think they're looking at their goaltending situation, and they're saying, we got a good backup in Tokarski. And obviously they have one of the best goalies in Price as their starter. I don't know if Marty Brodeur really fits in there.
I mean, let's look at you can go quickly around the league. There's really not a lot of spots for him. If he want the best, you know, thing for him to do right now would be to wait for an injury. That's all. But I mean, at the end of the day, I don't know if it really matters. Nothing he does here is going to affect his legacy. I don't believe in, you know, Michael Jordan at the Wizards tarnishes his legacy or whoever. No. I don't care. No. Dominic Hasek with the Senators.
St. Louis Blues tarnish Gretzky's legacy?
Yeah,
of course not.
You know, I mean, it's that's maybe your perception, but Marty Brodeur, if he wants to play, let him play as long as he can/wants to. But I don't personally think he's going to be overly productive, and I don't think he's going to get much of an opportunity unless there are significant injuries, which may happen.
Here's Pierre Maguire speaking about Marty Brodeur.
If I had a chance to talk to him, I'd say, you started in New Jersey, you won in New Jersey, you're a legend in New Jersey. Why would you leave New Jersey if it's your last year?
I couldn't agree, Drew, more with Pierre. In this sense, because, you know, it's different if you're Jerome Iginla right now trying to win your first cup. It's different if you're Ray Bourque when he went to Colorado from Boston. Marty Brodeur's won everything.
Yeah.
He's literally got everything. So there's no reason for him to play one more year with another team.
And that's his turf, and he doesn't want to give it up to Corey Schneider, and that was awkward last year. Mm-hmm. That's a problem.
Let's go to break. When we come back, Josh Cooper is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
One hour down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290 online, tsn1290.ca. You can follow us on Twitter @IllegalCurve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve.
And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to be joined by our good friend, Josh Cooper. Josh covers the Nashville Predators. Josh, welcome to the program, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
As always, Josh, I'm going to give our audience a little bit of the background. You are, still are, one of the most well-respected hockey journalists in both the United States and in Canada. And as of this week, or as of last Saturday at this time, you were employed by the Tennessean newspaper in Nashville. You are their beat writer for the Predators. You covered the team. You went on the road with them all the time. You've had the pleasure of joining us here in Winnipeg on more than one occasion. I believe it was Wednesday. You can tell me if I got the date wrong. It was
Thursday.
Thursday, you were informed by the Tennessean that you're services were no longer needed. They are making newsroom cuts, and no longer were you going to be the beat writer for the Predators. Since then, there was an outpouring of support from media, both local in Nashville, here in Canada, and really across the hockey world. So let's start with that. Can you tell us about the reaction you received and the support you've received from the hockey community since everything came down on Thursday?
Really humbling and overwhelming. And yeah, I've been watching hockey ever since I was a little kid, playing hockey ever since I was a little kid. My dad took me to Ranger games when I was a baby, essentially, and growing up in New York City, even went to Game 7 of the 94 Cup Finals, went to Game 7 of the 94 Eastern Conference Finals, so I got his last game. So I've always had this kind of, I've always been like kind of on the outside, just a fan watching, and then you get into this job and you go on the inside and you sort of really see what everyone says about hockey people, in the sense that they're just really, really the best people out there. And, reporters, even some former players, some agents, some managers called me or texted me, or it's been pretty overwhelming. And I'm very humbled, and my wife and I are very grateful for everything. It's been an interesting couple of days, but, nonetheless, people go through these all the time, and, it just means a new chapter in our lives, which we're totally cool and comfortable with.
Josh, we want to ask you something about specifically writing about hockey. What do you love, and you touched on this a little bit in your first answer to the first question, what do you love the most about writing and covering specifically the NHL and the Nashville Predators?
I love the people. I really do. I mean, I could say I love the Marriott points, but we all know that, and every hockey writer knows that. Pretty much paid for my honeymoon, but no, I mean, it's people that you deal with. I mean, it's just, there's so many layers and interesting human beings that you come across, and, especially, there's just so many different cross-sections. I mean, I covered the NHL in Nashville, Tennessee. 20, 30 years ago, who would have ever thunk that was even a possibility? I mean, seriously, like, this is Nashville. I mean, and you kind of lose perspective of that because it's become so regular, and from Barry Trotz, who I think is a tremendous coach, to David Poile, who's done everything he could to keep this organization afloat and really put his heart and soul into absolutely everything, as there was ownership instability, a potential move. I mean, it's been quite fascinating. So what do I love about it? It's just, honestly, life in a lot of ways is all about the people you meet and the people you know. And I've gotten to meet and know some of the best out there, and also had some really just cool experiences. I mean, it's things that you don't normally see. And as you guys know, when you're in the Winnipeg press box or even going to morning skates, I mean, there's just some really fascinating stuff, and people care too. And I guess I'm kind of rambling, but I guess what do I love? It's just simply, just the caring element of the game. I mean, you do have, your bad seeds here and there, but for the most part, people do seem to care about other people, and it's a really just kind of neat, rustic, if you will, sport that is also very well aligned for 21st century type fan bases, and I think it's just a really cool environment and really fun to kind of be around.
Josh, how has hockey evolved in Nashville since you... began writing for the Tennessee in 2010?
Well, I'm going to take you guys back a little bit further because I was a college student at Vanderbilt, and I started essentially watching Preds games in 2001. So it's evolved greatly. There's a personality here. There's a flair. There's kind of a trendy factor, if you will, just as kind of, I guess you can call them a hipster boom that sort of happened here. And a lot of people and transplants have really latched onto the Preds and local fan bases as well. You know, it's definitely evolved and it's definitely changed quite a bit. And the fan base has stayed loyal and stuck with it despite a lot of these challenges and some teams that maybe weren't so good and some ownership situations that could have driven them away. But, you know, I think, you know, I mean, it's obviously there's still some issues here. I mean, you know, it's still, again, as I said, it's hockey in Nashville. I mean, it is a different type of breed and a different type of animal, but, you know, they kind of embrace sort of this, I don't know, college football-ish meets country music mentality and kind of put hockey in the crosshairs of it. And I think that they've stayed true to those roots despite a lot of the changes and the quote-unquote gold uniforms as well.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Our guest is Josh Cooper. Josh covers the Nashville Predators. Josh, moving to the actual on-ice product, obvious new head coach in Nashville for the first time in Peter Laviolette. You know, what do you think this team's going to look like under his tutelage?
I think it's going to look pretty solid. You know, people seem excited. There's a different sort of feeling around there. You know, Barry Trotz obviously is a native son of Manitoba and one of my favorite people I've ever covered. So, you know, I think he did as good a job as he could possibly do here. And I think he's going to do an excellent job in Washington, but sometimes just change needs to be made for change's sake. And I think that if you're going to do that, you may as well bring in someone completely different. And Laviolette is not completely different to a degree. He still has some of the personality traits that Barry Trotz had, but you know, he does like to push the pace. He does like to be a little more offensive. He does like to do a lot of things that are, I guess, are more kind of, I guess, offensive oriented, if you will, kind of at a loss for words to some degree. But, you know, he's the type of coach who I think will bring a different type of attitude and a different type of mindset. And you can really tell, I talked to the players yesterday. There really is just a different mood and vibe around here. And I can recall, it's not just same old, same old. They're really looking, I wouldn't say looking forward to the change, but they're definitely interested to see how things are going to happen and how things are going to play out, which, you know, is a lot different than years past where it was always kind of same old, same old.
Josh, you mentioned that it really was time for change in Nashville, and I really do agree with you with what you're saying about Barry Trotz of Dauphin, Manitoba. As far as David Poile is concerned, Nashville Predators GM, do you think that he's adapted because of the hiring of Peter Laviolette, or do you think he's adapted since the hiring of Peter Laviolette?
I think he had a plan to get more offensive this summer, and I think that when, you know, there were some players he went after, you know, Jason Spezza, Ryan Kessler, players who had Nashville, there are no trade lists, and I think he had to sort of add more players, and I think he got good value in guys like Derek Roy, Mike Rivero, former Winnipeg Jet, Olli Jokinen, you know, not spending a ton of money, but getting guys who could produce maybe more than 40 points, maybe 50, maybe even 60 points in this new offensive system. So has he adapted? I think he sort of had a plan to do this before Peter Laviolette, and I think that Laviolette has been a good recruiting tool for him just because he's an established name who's won a Stanley Cup, and you're not bringing in kind of a new offensive-minded coach that nobody knows. So, you know, granted, you know, David Poile didn't get the big names in terms of staying, going after or being able to get Ryan Kessler or get Jason Spezza, but I still think he got the right guys that need to come here and the right amount of depth as well, especially now that Mike Fisher's out probably until late November at the earliest for the ruptured Achilles. You know, I think that he got the right guy. So I think that he was able to, I think he had a plan. I think Peter Laviolette was part of that plan, but he still would have been able to at least try to go out and get some more offensive type guys.
Josh, you know, the Jets here have a little bit of issues bringing in free agents and having Winnipeg be a desirable place for a guy who can play anywhere to select. Do the Predators face that same challenge, and if so, why?
Well, first and foremost, as you guys know, I love Winnipeg. So if they have any problems, you know, or need a recruiting tool, I'm here. But
specifically, Earl's Main, right, Josh?
Well, the fan base is loyal, and you know, and people are really happy there that the NHL's in town, and I think that's an awesome thing because in some markets, it's kind of there's a lot of apathy, if you will, and that's one of the things I love about Winnipeg is that people seem to genuinely do care and are not just kind of like, well, you know, there's a hockey game tonight. It's like they actually love going to the hockey games and are just thrilled to death that there's a team in town. But to answer your question about Nashville, I think it just kind of goes back to winning. I mean, this place really does have a lot going for it as NHL market to attract players, and that there's no state income tax here, which is a big deal. Also, you know, the weather is relatively mild. Pretty cheap lifestyle. You get to essentially, hockey is not so huge here to where I think I've heard Shea Weber say, yeah, I went to Target the other day and nobody knew who I was. I mean, you know, it's just, and that guy is pretty, I think he's the highest paid athlete in the entire city. So, especially with Chris Johnson no longer being here. So, you know, there's a lot that this market has going for it. It's just, I think it just kind of goes back to winning and the culture here. And I think that, you know, a lot of that stems back from two summers ago when Ryan Suter left and then Weber tried to leave on the offer sheet, and that still stings in a lot of ways because it's the same management group and the same ownership group. And I feel like, you know, if Shea Weber can really put that behind him and try to recruit guys and really, I guess, sort of inundate himself in the entire city and the culture here, the team starts winning, Peter Laviolette starts getting guys to come here, then they can finally move forward and get past that whole situation, which I think has still dented their ability to get players.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Josh Cooper. We're talking about the Nashville Predators. Josh, one player that the Predators were able to sign this offseason is Olli Jokinen. What are the Predators hoping to get out of Olli on this one-year contract?
Steadiness, some offense, I guess leadership. I don't know him as well as you guys do, but they touted his love of playing hockey, that he just loves to play and plays a lot. I mean, I saw him at practice the other day. His hair looks immaculate, so I think that's a cool thing. The flow is looking sick. Joking aside, I think they want to try him at wing because they have a lot of centers, but they like his versatility to play wing and center. And, you know, he still is, you know, even though he's a little bit older, he still can put up, you know, close to 50 points. So, and on this team, that's always been kind of a benchmark / leading scorer type situation. So, I think they're looking for him to just kind of come in, do what the coaching staff asks, play wing, play center. And I think that they feel like he's adaptable and will do what people tell him to do.
Josh, we wanted to ask you about Colin Wilson, another Winnipeg connection. I know he struggled, and I know a lot is expected out of him as far as bloodlines go. What role do you see him playing, especially with all of the players they've brought in at the forward position this year?
That's a really good question, and one that I don't really know. I don't think the team really knows, and I don't know if Colin even really knows. I think that the Preds want him to really take that sort of leadership, leading and scoring kind of dynamic offensive threat type role, but just hasn't happened yet. Maybe a new coach can bring that out of him. Team has touted Peter Laviolette's ability to really coax talent out of people like Jacob Voracek, Claude Giroux, and just others. So, I think that that's what they're hoping for, but I don't know if that's actually going to happen just because I think he's almost 25 or it's going to be 25 this year, and it hasn't happened yet. So what to expect out of him? I think the team, the coaching staff, and just a lot of people around here are all wondering just because we've been waiting for it for a while, but it just hasn't happened yet with him.
I think there's a good chance he plays wing this year?
I think with the glut of people at centers, I think, yeah. I think originally they had him penciled in at center at the start of the offseason, but considering a lot of the players who are out there and the value that they had between Ribeiro for $1 million, mm-hmm. Derek Roy for $1 million, I think that, you know, and they also have Cali Yarncroak in their system as well. I keep forgetting that they're hoping that he's going to develop into a solid two-way center. I think that his place is more so on wing because that's pretty much all he's played at this point in his NHL career.
Josh, you look at who they've added, and we've talked about, you've mentioned basically everybody now, Liokinen and Ribeiro and Derek Roy, and you look at, you know, Anton Belchenkov's another guy they've added, obviously trading for James Neal. Going to have a healthy, you know, hopefully, Pekka Rinne this year. What are the expectations in Nashville in terms of making the playoffs, considering the improvements of all the other teams in the division this offseason?
Well, I think that it's a sink or swim mentality, and I have to give the Predators props for swinging for the fences this offseason. I mean, yeah, it wasn't like they signed a big name for a ton of money, but I think that all the bigger names sort of knew where they were going. I mean, you look at Paul Stastny going home to St. Louis and Vanek going to Minnesota where he played college hockey. I mean, I think all these guys knew where they were going to end up going. I think that the expectation level is still pretty high, and it should be pretty high because they made a lot of really, I think, very solid value moves, and they have a good coaching staff. They have a good general manager. As you mentioned, they were 3 points out of the playoffs last year with Pekka Rinne out for over 60 games. Mm-hmm. You know, they, I think, could really make some noise. I mean, again, the problem is all these Central Division teams seem to get better, but at the same token, so is the Preds. And I think that, you know, if Derek Roy is only 31 years old, he still has some prime years left. I think that if he can step up, you know, Ribeiro has a bit of a bounce back. Everyone's kind of said that he looks healthier than he did a year ago. You know, I think that they can definitely make some noise. Or can they compete with a team like Chicago that has Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane and Marian Hossa and Patrick Sharp, or, you know, Nathan MacKinnon in Colorado is, you know, obviously turning into a superstar? I don't know, but I think that they can definitely be better, and I think that they could definitely be a more fun team to watch with a lot of the personnel they have this year.
Josh, we'll let you go on this final question. You know, we mentioned off the start of the show that a change in career path, at least for now, or at least destination, or where you're going to be hanging that shingle. What's next for you personally?
Well, taking a few days with my wife. We're going to watch the Vanderbilt football game today. I'm sure they will lose, but
you're punishing yourself, you know, further.
Yeah, punishing myself even further. No, but you know, I mean, all we can really do is deal with the hand we're dealt. So, you know, we'll be fine. And you know, I think that I just again appreciate a lot of the support a lot of people have given us over the last few days. Be it, you know, by calling us, texting us, tweeting us, DMing us, Facebook messaging us, writing blogs about us. I mean, it's been pretty humbling. So, you know, I'm ready for the next challenge, whatever it may be, and we're full speed ahead on it. So, don't worry about me, guys. I will be A-okay. As you introduced me to Bruce Springsteen's No Surrender, I guess that has to kind of be my motto. Or as my good friend Rob Rossi tweeted at me, better days are shining through. Another Bruce Springsteen song.
We thought about that one too, Josh. That No Surrender was the best choice. But I just want to say, I think I speak for all the guys in here. You know, when we started, actually, the Legal Curve website before the show, I used to go through all the morning papers, and John Glennon was on the beat before you were the Tennessean. He used to come on the show, and he's moved over to cover the Titans. You've covered the Predators for the Tennessean since 2010. I've done a tremendous job, and if you read Josh's work, you know that not only is he's a great writer, but he knows the game of hockey, and that's always, you know, and he loves the game, and you can tell that by meeting him. So you'll land on your feet, and we wish you the best, and we're sure things will work out.
I'm not going anywhere, guys. Still here. So, you know, just remember that.
Yeah.
I'll be around.
Josh, we've still got a table waiting for you at Earl's Main, so anytime you want to come back, we've got a table there with your name on it, so we're good to go.
Well, the tough part is trying to convince my wife to go to Winnipeg in the middle of the summer. But, you know, I think that I've sold it well enough to where I can do that. So I think we'll be all right there.
Josh Cooper covers the Nashville Predators. He's a longtime guest on the show and one of our best friends. Josh, thanks very much for doing this, buddy.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it. Take care.
Thanks,
we'll talk soon. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Josh Cooper. In case you missed any of that interview or the interview with Mike Colligan beforehand, they will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com.
Now, Drew, I gotta say, you know, I'm getting excited here. Hockey's coming up.
That's true.
I'm also excited because we're going to Bernstein's after the show.
Also true.
Also true.
But I'm more excited that hockey, I mean, the NFL just started on Thursday, but, I mean, is it just me? Are you guys not excited?
I'm excited.
Are you? It doesn't seem like you're that excited.
Yeah, Drew, you don't seem that excited.
I'm excited. I'll go higher and higher as you keep accusing me of not being excited. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center, 204-487-2226, or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, a couple of other news and note items from around the NHL before we get into the signings next segment. Leafs defenseman Stéphane Robida, not yet cleared for contact. How concerning do you find that he hasn't been cleared for contact and we're only about 2 weeks away from training camp?
Wasn't that expected, though? Like they brought him in knowing he was going to miss some time. And older guy gets injured with the Ducks. It would have certainly been helpful for them on that playoff run if they had kept going, especially against the Kings. But, yeah, I mean, that's kind of expected, Drew. And a guy like that, I think, is brought in. They're not as concerned about him not being clear for contact right now as much as I think the purpose of bringing him in is to change the attitude and change the toughness on the back end. They will eventually get him back, but they don't have a great D granted, but I don't think they signed him with the expectation that he'd be ready to roll and fresh for the season start.
Might as well hear it straight from the horse's mouth. Here's Stéphane Robida on TSN 1050.
Health-wise, I feel really good. I'm not cleared yet to do like contact and like one-on-one. It's been 4 months last week since surgery, so usually they said 4 to 6 months, and I came back from the first injury 3 months and 3 weeks, so I feel really comfortable right now in the ice.
If he hasn't yet been cleared for contact, it's the second traumatic leg injury in the last, really, 2 years. How much can they expect from the guy?
Well, again, Drew, I don't think it's, you're not going to have to, I mean, again, he's a pretty determined player. He is a heart and soul guy. And he can provide you with, second pairing, right side, top 4 minutes. But, he's getting up there in age, and he's not the biggest guy. So I think the fact that he's not the biggest guy and the toughest guy, I think you hope for those top 4 minutes, but you don't expect them necessarily. And again, I think he's brought in to change the mentality. The Leafs were looked at as, you have Jake Gardiner, talented player. They signed him to an extension. Jake Gardiner, Morgan Rielly, again, talented player. You have Phaneuf. Well, there's question marks there in terms of what you have. Gunnarsson, they traded, they bring in Polak, and they sign Robida. The reason to do that is to become tougher on the back end, more difficult to play against. Polak's a big guy, not a good skater, but he's big, he'll hit you against the boards, and he's mean. Robida competes. And I think the Leafs thought their mix on the back end lacked a competitiveness. So even if he isn't always there to play every game, I think his willingness to battle and be there for his team and get healthy, all those things as opposed to take time and take it easy, I think is gonna rub off on his teammates.
I agree. And just quickly, Drew, I think Richie, I can't really add to what Richie said because he's right on all fronts. And I think, you mentioned Jake Gardiner and Morgan Rielly, Richie. And to me, that's the future of the defense and the key to this team. And Dion Phaneuf's got to be better. And Robida, as Richie mentioned as well, I'm just echoing what he's saying, I guess. I'm repeating his thoughts. But they knew he was injured. And, just one, point on Robida. You ask anybody in Dallas, and we could ask, Frank Provenzano, who we have on regularly. It was tough for them to get rid of Robida in Dallas, and they gave him the opportunity in Anaheim and all that, but he was very well liked, and as Richie mentioned too, great teammate and a really good defenseman, a great player on the ice, so they missed him in Dallas.
And we haven't also noted that he's signed for another 2 years after this year, so you want to take a little bit, and a 35-plus contract means that he counts against the books if he's not able to play. So you want to ensure that he's ready to roll, and you don't want to rush him here.
One other item before we go to the signings. Finally, we can put an end to the Todd Bertuzzi-Steve Moore situation, as the settlement has officially been filed with the courts, and it's done, and all the ink is dry. Here's Darren Dreger on the settlement.
Some believe that it's in that 25 to 30 million mark, but that's guessing. We don't have the inside information to responsibly put that information out there. I know others have speculated, but that's what it is.
Do you think this finally ends it? Is this the last we hear about it?
I hope so. Yeah, it's been a long time, guys.
Well, it's been 10 years.
Yeah, it's been a long time, and it's done with. I'm hopeful that, and we had a long discussion about this during the season.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful not only that Bertuzzi can put it behind him. Obviously, he was the instigator in this all, but that Steve Moore can finally move on. My view of Steve Moore, I interviewed him with Hustler, I think it was in February or so, still hasn't gotten over it. And at some point, you have to just move on. And I'm hopeful maybe this will be to allow him to close, the last chapter and move on to another chapter of his life, because last chapter of his hockey career, and move on to another chapter of his life, because you always felt like he was still, and I realize what he had, what he has gone through, and he still has, there's still side effects and everything else. But at some point you have to just take the next step there. And I think for Todd Bertuzzi, that'll probably provide some closure as well. I mean, think about it from his perspective, just financially. And again, I don't want him, the victim here is Steve Moore, not Todd Bertuzzi. But from Bertuzzi's perspective, whatever, if the speculation that Dreger has heard, 25, 30 million, if you watch Todd Bertuzzi play lately, I mean, is he playing because he needs the money? You don't know. And so maybe now, with the weight off his shoulders, maybe he will play better. Maybe he'll just pack it in. And that'll be interesting to watch. But allowing them both to be just to move on with their lives. Enough's enough on this front, I think.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to go to Boston and talk about the Krejci signing, and we'll go to Colorado to talk about the Barry signing. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is.
Drew the Bear Mandel.
Drew the
Let's
Bear
bring that
Mandel.
Back.
Yeah, no, we're not bringing back Drew the Bear Mandel, that's for sure.
Why not?
Nobody needs that.
Ezra's
much more of a bear than I am.
Richie, what's more shocking, that Remus is here right now at this time of day, or that I was at a wedding last night and I'm here right now?
It's a close call. I didn't think you'd make it on time. And when I went to step out of the studio last segment, I was shocked to see Remus in the other room.
Remus looks good. Like, he's working. He looks healthy.
Based on the text messages that Richard was saying he received from you at around 10 o'clock last night, you're looking a lot healthier than I thought you would be.
Yeah, I agree.
It was a great, great wedding last night at Fort White Alive.
What time did it start?
About 5:30.
That's why you're doing okay.
Yeah, I actually like the early wedding. It's nice, and the food was great. It was Christiane and Adam, good friends, and it was at Fort White, and it was a great wedding. Good times. And I think they're... I mean, what I'm trying to say, Drew, is true love is blind.
For our listeners, that's an old school reference.
That's an old school reference, is right. Boston Bruins signed David Krejci earlier this week to a 6-year, $43.5 million contract.
And Olsen looking to move it. Krejci intercepts left side, drops it back to the blue line. Kevin Miller straight away. His shot blocked. Loose puck to Krejci. Wrist shot! Score! Off the post and in for David Krejci! And a 3-0 lead for the Bruins late in the second.
6-year, $43.5 million contract for the Bruins center. An average annual value salary cap hit of $7.25 million per season. That makes him the highest paid player on the Bruins roster. Your thoughts on this deal for Krejci?
Well, okay, first off, I'm going to qualify. David Krejci is to me, one of my favorite players in the game, and he is so good at kind of every facet of the game. He's such a good all-around player, and I know Patrice Bergeron signed for 6.5 over the duration that Krejci signed for, so Krejci is getting paid a little bit more than him, not too much more, $750,000 more per year. David Krejci, is a key to that team for many reasons. Him and Bergeron are essentially interchangeable in the first line, second line center, because I think they're both first line centers. So I'll say that. He's a right-handed shot in the middle. He has played with Lucic and Horton, and then Lucic and Iginla for the most part. he's you know, I know he struggled at the end of last season, but for the most part has been an absolute clutch player when the team's needed it. He everything he does on the ice, he can pass, he can score, he can defend, he can play whenever you need him to, wherever you need him to. He's a trustworthy player. He works really hard. I mean, he's everything you want in a number one, number two, number one center, really. He's everything you want. He's unassuming. He personifies exactly what I think Peter Chiarelli wants out of his squad. And to sign him, I know he's 28 now. He's going to sign him, you know, for through his 34 year. It could maybe become a little bit less productive in the last 2-3 years of that deal, but I think this is a good contract, and I think Boston's success. You know, you talk about Chara, sure, but the middle and especially the top two guys are the keys, and they've got those guys locked up both long term. And the good teams are great up the middle, and the Boston Bruins are no exception to that. I have no problem with the contract.
Ezzie?
Yeah, how could you have a problem with this contract, really? I mean, it's not that many years, 3 years, 4 years since he completely dominated the playoffs. And as Richie mentioned, this team has two first-line centers, and he does everything so well. And there's some issues in Boston. They didn't make too many moves in the offseason. They lost players. There's a chance that they might have to move a defenseman out. And as far as forward goes, though, I mean, I know Riley Smith has to still get his name on a contract, and Torrey Krug has to still get his name on a contract, Richie. Mm-hmm. But they'll sign those guys. And David Krejci, he's one of those players, and I agree with what you're saying, Rich. It's such one of those players that's a treat to watch. Patrice Bergeron as well, and you know, a guy like David Pastrnak, who they just drafted, they're already talking about how he's looking up to Krejci. And how he specifically mentions him. He's become, as Zdeno Chara has, Richie, and as Patrice Bergeron has, he's become the face of the Boston Bruins. This guy's a leader for this team. And he struggled at times last year. But I still think, again, I don't know if Zdeno Chara is getting a little up there in age, but I still think this team, for me, this is one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference still.
And you look at his play. I know last year he had 4 assists in 12 playoff games, and that was those were his struggles. But you look at the years before that, when they go to the final against Chicago, 26 points in 22 games. When they win the Cup against Vancouver, 23 points in 25 games. It's a real deal. And this isn't my opinion, and I think it's probably shared by most. You don't go wrong when you sign your best players to the big money deals. Your organization takes a wrong turn when you sign average players to big money deals. David Clarkson's, different guys like that. That's when you got problems. David Krejci is no David Clarkson. He's a great player, and he sees the ice real well. Real good. I like him. A good signing.
For our next contract signing, we go to Colorado.
Holds down the left wing. Looks and holds. Takes it down deep. Stops on a dime. Looks for a trailer. Can't find one. Sends it out front. Redirected. Score! Tyson Barry! At the top of the crease. The redirect upstairs. Overlaps head under the crossbar. And the Avs beat the Vancouver Canucks 3-2 in overtime on Tyson Barry's 10th goal of the season. Oh, man, oh, man.
Colorado Avalanche signed RFA defenseman Tyson Barry to a 2-year, $5.2 million contract, average annual value of $2.6 million. Thoughts on this deal for Tyson Barry?
Well, you know, Tyson Barry was a player I didn't know a ton about, and you get to see him play, and boy, he's a natural offensive talent. And if people in Winnipeg recall, and they may not, when Colorado came to town, and they were in town multiple times this year, but I think it was the last game they played in town, the Avalanche had injuries up front, and actually Tyson Barry played the right wing. So it shows his flexibility. I mean, not every player can do that, and certainly not every player can do that. His loss in the playoffs... We can get into dirty play again.
But Cook was the guy who took him out in the playoffs.
He's a bum. But his loss in the playoffs was significant to Colorado. And if you look at Colorado losing in 7 games to Minnesota, you certainly could argue, I think it would be a pretty good argument, that Colorado with Tyson Barry would have won that first-round series. He is, you know, you're going to get good value out of him now. These are RFA years, $2.6 million per year. He's going to put up some big points with the offensive talent they have there. And he has the opportunity to do that. And I think they will get value out of both years of the contracts, which is what you should be getting. We spoke about that in the beginning of the show, out of your, you know, younger players and your RFA players.
Sure. He had no arbitration eligibility. Right. He was just coming off of his entry level contract.
That's right. And he's gonna put up some big points. We'll talk about him in our fantasy preview, put it that way.
Yeah, and 13 goals, 38 points this year, scored 4 power play goals, 5 game winners this year. You know, Richie, you mentioned he's kind of come out of nowhere. You know, he was a third round pick, and he put up good numbers for the Kelowna Rockets in the mm-hmm. WHL, but he had to take that slower route. He played for Lake Erie in the AHL, and I agree again with Richie. He's that team, and they don't have a lot of offensive defensemen. They brought in Brad Stewart,
That's
but
right.
I mean, he's yeah. brought in to be a veteran and a punishing defensive defenseman. But you look at who they've got, Jan Heda, another guy. He's a defensive defenseman. Mm-hmm. Eric Johnson, sure, he adds offense. Tyson Berry is their guy right now, and he went down in the playoffs and they missed him. So, and then for him, you know, it's what we've seen many times,
yeah.
and you could probably see this with other defensemen. It's a bridge contract, and he's going to get the opportunity to now possibly make more money. Similar to, I'm not comparing him to PK Subban, but I'm saying I think yeah. it works both well for him and the team to sign that 2-year deal.
Berry also, to me, sees the game better than Eric Johnson does, which makes him a better offensive talent and better offensive fit for that team in term, you know, when it comes down to putting your 5 best scorers out there.
One last contract. The Flyers signed Zach Rinaldo to a 2-year, $1.7 million contract extension. It's $850,000 per season. Are you surprised that Rinaldo got a 2-year deal from the Flyers?
I mean, he plays a reckless game. He certainly can instigate a forecheck for you, which I think they want. Surprised. I mean, Drew, it's such little money that I'm not shocked. But, yeah, anytime a guy like that gets more than a year, you wonder a bit. But they like, you know, his ability to cause trouble. They like his physicality. And the Flyers always have guys like that who are, to me, play over the edge. And, again, we talk about, you know, fundamentally changing the game. You're not going to change the game when you have all these organizations bringing in guys like that.
Yeah, we know what to expect out of Zach Rinaldo. So he gets a 2-year deal, and that's he gives you the truculence. He can drop the gloves and stick up for his teammates, and you know, if he chips in some goals, that's a bonus. But you know, the Philly Flyers are always going to have that Broad Street bully in them, right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment here this Saturday on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN 1290 online at tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
One final segment this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, the longest-running independent comedy club in North America. Their 30-year anniversary is coming up, so they're in the midst of doing a little bit of renovations to the club. We'll reopen very shortly, and be sure to get your tickets for upcoming comedians at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Rapid fire.
Rapid fire for this Saturday morning. Speaking on TSN 1050, Dave Nonis disputes the notion that the Leafs were anti-analytics prior to hiring Kyle Dubas as assistant general manager. Do you believe him, or do you think the organization is playing catch-up after being dismissive for years?
Can we just not talk about analytics ever again on the show?
Like, I mean, you hear Nonis' comments, and he says that they weren't necessarily convinced of the value of them, and that Dubas kind of pitched it to them in a way that made it more something that they could use more, and something they haven't used it before. I'm sure they've used it before in some form, but it just, like, people need to write about the same thing over and over and over again. I mean, the fact that let's understand something right now. The fact that Dave Nonis may not have used analytics doesn't mean that's why he signed David Clarkson. You can't just put those two and two together. I mean, that's not necessarily, you know, that caused him to do that. You don't know that. I mean, of course, people want to say that because they want to back up their position. They don't know that. I mean, some other guys may not have used analytics and signed great players. But you don't know that. So I understand the value. I said there's nothing wrong with hiring a guy like Kyle Dubas. I mean, of course, he's Theo Epstein II already.
Mm-hmm.
He's done a damn thing in the NHL. And he seems very qualified for the position. But let's not anoint him boy genius until he does something. You know, and it's amazing how many people on the internet write the same article every day. Like, think of something new. Like Dave Nonis, you go after Dave Nonis for all this stuff. Don't get me wrong, Dave Nonis hasn't done a bang-up job there by any means. But think of another angle. Be a little bit creative. I know the internet gives anybody the chance to write anything. That's great. Why don't you stop all writing the same article and think of something new?
I remind you of a quote that Sean Fitzgerald put in his article from Brian Burke. Everybody's looking for these money ball breakthroughs. I have yet to see anything that has value in terms of an alternative way of evaluating players.
There is
I agree. I, you know what? I agree with Brian Burke. I really do. And
see, I don't.
I know you don't. Well, I mean, it's...
There is value in
yes.
what you get from some of these things. And there is not value in other things. But we know that. At least I think we know that. And to write the same article every day, what is Dave Nonis? Why the heck would Dave Nonis tell you what he's been doing in his meetings all the time? And these guys just write the same articles. I mean, none of these guys are just, oh, God. I mean, come on. The same interviews, the same articles. Are you using analytics? It's like, why the hell would I tell you what I'm using in my preparation for signing and trading guys? It's like, how do you strategize against stopping Sidney Crosby? Well, what we do is we throw two guys into the corner, one guy down in front of the net, and we try and take... Why would I tell you that? It's the same thing. But people have nothing to write about. They have no other angles.
According to La Presse newspaper, the Canadian Hockey League is looking at changing the Memorial Cup format
good.
To be more like the NCAA March Madness tournament.
It's boring. That's good. That's
Does
a good
the
idea.
Memorial Cup need a change in format from the current round-robin tournament?
Yes. 100%. First of all, you can't have a default team in there. I mean,
I agree
with that. You can because of the support and fans necessary. But if you create a different reason for fans to be engaged, then you don't need to have that anymore. Because right now you get your league winner in each of the, you know, in OHL, QMJHL, and WHL. Then you have the home team also gets a berth into the tournament. I think you kind of need that for interest.
Yep.
Because depending on the location. But if you make it a March Madness thing, I don't think you need that team. That team will beat it anyways. But you don't need them to be one of the four teams remaining because really a lot of the times they're not that good. This would be great for hockey. Canadian junior hockey. Now, they make a lot of money and have to account for where that money goes. That's a different story. But I think it's a great idea. And I think it's taken them on awful long.
A couple of years ago, Saskatoon had one of the worst teams
yes.
in the WHL. They sat around, hosted the Memorial Cup.
That's right.
And so I agree with Richie. I think it is time for a format change. I love watching the Memorial Cup. I think we all do every year. And I think if they can make fans... I think you have to include more teams, Drew. It comes down to that. I think you got to open it up more. And give more teams a chance, and you know, I think they're going to go through with this.
I heard Dave Nonis didn't use analytics when he ordered his salad at lunch today.
Speaking to CSN Philadelphia, Flyers general manager Ron Hextall said that his team isn't elite, but they can still win, like the Rangers last year. Can a non-elite team win the Stanley Cup?
Sure. I mean, anybody can go on a run, but you're going to need goaltending, and that's going to assume that Steve Mason's the guy to take you there. And I just don't think that's the case. Their defense isn't good enough either. But they're good. They have talent. Up front, they have talent. They need to redo their defense. And they have some cap problems. And I still don't love their goaltending. So, yeah, they're a good team. Hey, they took the Rangers to 7 games and lost 2-1 in Game 7. And the Rangers went all the way.
I think they're definitely a playoff team. I think when we do our season preview show coming up here in a couple of weeks, I'm going to pick them to make the playoffs. I don't think they're a top team in the Eastern Conference. No. And, you know, the goaltending, the defense and all that, they've still got, you know, two of the best forwards in the NHL, in my opinion, Claude Giroux, Jacob Voracek, and I think, you know, Sean Couturier. They're very strong up the middle. But yeah, I think, I mean, again, does this go back to the debate? Were the New Jersey Devils an elite team in 2000, in 2003? I mean, they had one of the best defensemen, one of the best goaltenders, yeah. But they didn't have really elite forwards unless you consider...
So it's a reverse. So I don't think they can do it.
I think that you can win the Stanley Cup, but we know, what does it come down to every year, Drew? It comes down to defense.
According to David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News, the San Jose Sharks are switching from black jerseys to teal jerseys in the postseason. Is this change the missing piece in the Sharks' lengthy quest to make a run in the Western Conference playoffs?
Yes, they're going to win the Stanley Cup this year.
The Sharks have had a laughable offseason. It's been an embarrassment.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And cheers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something stick like this.
Surprise.
surprisingly not good.
Joe Thornton's like the guy and the girl dating, and the girl wants to break up with the guy, and the guy won't accept it. It's like, man, move on. Accept the trade and go. Go somewhere else.
Is that your jeer?
No, my jeer is to the Nashville Tennesseans' decision to lay off a bunch of people, including Josh Cooper. If you're trying to engage an audience and trying to keep people interested in your product, you want to keep quality people and find ways to monetize the business. And you haven't done that. I think this goes for many papers. We keep seeing good people get let go. People who are not only good people, but people who are good at their jobs. And if the newspapers want to continue to be the sources for information, hockey information, and the beat and everything else, then you got to find a way to keep these guys around. It's not an easy solution. I know it's not simple, but I think it needs to be done, and that's my jeer.
Ezzy?
I'm going to have to also echo what Richie said. I think we all agree Josh Cooper's a great writer, and it's a very unfortunate decision. I didn't really have a cheer prepared.
Yeah, that's what you said.
Hockey-related, so I'm just going to cheer the meal that I had at the wedding last night. It was delicious, including the key lime pie. Wow.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers by... I'm going to cheer... I'll take a personal cheer here. It's my grandfather's 97th birthday today.
Oh, very awesome. Nice.
And so he's listening, so I want to give a cheer out to Joe Mindell, who's listening to the show. Listens, a faithful listener week in, week out. So
happy birthday, Joe.
A cheer to my grandfather turning 97 years young today. That's it for us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show today. Big thank you to our guest, Josh Cooper, covers the Nashville Predators, and Mike Colligan, who covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for thehockeywriters.com. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes, on tsn1290.ca, and on our website, illegalcurve.com. Take note of the start time for next Saturday and the Saturday following, 10 a.m. here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 10 a.m. on the 13th, 10 a.m. on the 20th, back to 9 a.m. on the 27th. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Big thank you to our sponsors, Bernstein's Deli, Linden Market Dental Center, and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, for producer Tim and producer Remus, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.